Hanna on piano and Lenny White on drums, all in on Blues in the Closet. It's from Carter's 2001 album, Stardust. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and a program I hope you will find useful today. We're going to talk about two subjects. And the first is Let Us Pray, P-R-E-Y. And that refers to the current dilemma of the Catholic Church as regards the matter of sexual abuse, not just in the United States, but even in the far-flung corners of the world. And we'll talk next about our favorite subject, which we haven't touched yet. I'm just doing this just to keep you on edge. Yes, we'll be talking about Omarosa right after the Catholic Church. Pain all around. Pope Francis today addressed his 1.2 billion faithful on the matter of the church's current crisis of sexual abuse, rampant sexual abuse that seems to have just spiraled out of control. So he delivered a letter. He wrote a letter to the congregations all over the world and addressed the subject. To his credit, he was clear that it was something that the church had to address as an institution, that it was unacceptable, he was aware that it had been a hidden matter for many, many, many years, and that he was encouraging all Catholics and all people of conscience to be especially mindful that this is a structural problem, and to summon up the courage to assist the church, not only in addressing it, but in solving it. Well, the letter comes after a grand jury in Pennsylvania issued a report that said they found that more than 301 priests were responsible for an unprecedented number of cases of sexual assault and sexual abuse. And in his own way, you know, you have to weigh these things in the context in which they are occurring. Here he is, the leader of the church, the leader of the world community of Catholic parishes and priests and the faithful. So he comes at it, if you read this letter, it's very interesting in the way he does it. And that is, he takes not too direct an angle, but a slightly oblique one, in which he places the unprecedented numbers of cases that have arisen all over the world in the context of a general deterioration in the morals and ethics of the world. The world is falling apart. The world is falling prey to the temptations of the flesh. The world is going farther and farther astray from God. And so the duty is to rein the errant in, bring them back to God, bring them back to a centeredness in the Catholic Church and in belief and faith. This would help attenuate the instances and the cases of sexual abuse within the church. And that is why I'm angry. This Pope had earned a reputation of being very direct, very politically astute, and very forthright. And I was hoping he wouldn't become the diplomat today in addressing a problem that he knows very well, popes before him knew it, that the Catholic Church in many cases was a bastion of sexual proclivities among its laity and its priests and officers of the church for a long time. This report that I referred to, just issued in Pennsylvania, covered a matter of only 70 years. But of course, this has been going on for a very long time. And none other than the church itself covered it up, saw to it that there were to be no credible complaints, and in conjunction with local law enforcement, such as it was, that none of these cases came to light. So it was very disappointing hearing the Pope talk in general terms when there is a great deal of specificity about this particular crime within the global church. And by the way, this is not a spiritual failing. From the point of view of the Pope, I could understand how he sees it that way. But it happens to be a crime. The Pope does not address what is to be done when its officials and its priests and its bishops and archbishops commit this crime. What is supposed to happen to them? This is not an administrative issue. And this has been my number one complaint about how religious institutions across the board deal with very unsavory things like this. This is not to be corrected by people suddenly summoning up the best of themselves. This is about people going into the field, interviewing witnesses, getting evidence, having a trial, and putting the errant priest right inside of a jail or prison. So, this is the question, even as he supposedly addresses the question today. In a very long and substantive speech, he's speaking almost ethereally about the impact of such crimes on people, how debilitating they can be, how long-lasting they can be, how awful it is that these crimes occur. But not once does the Pope recognize that this also is a crime? And that for the longest number of years, the Catholic Church has covered up these crimes, has enabled these crimes by covering them up. And treats these crimes not as crimes, but as personal failings that could be corrected through faith. It so happens they have direct evidence of how serious the problem is. NPR reports that the church has paid out in the United States alone more than $3 billion in settlements. And as you know, that's a favorite term of mine because we know what it means. $3 billion in settlements. From my perspective, it automatically means that the church knew and knows about the crimes committed by its own hierarchy, and is willing to pay people to shut up and go away, say nothing, do nothing. And as we've discussed time and again about settlements, when you settle, that is, when the victims of sex abuse and sex attacks settle, they have to promise never to raise the matter again. They have to pretend it never happened. These acts against them that are causing so much psychological pain that even the Pope recognizes that, they dare not raise the matter again. Take these few dollars and get lost. God bless you, my child. That is a problem. And perhaps that's why this problem, this particular problem, persists. And I'm not suggesting that the Catholic Church is the only place where it persists, but it does have an extraordinary known history with this particular problem. It finds all kinds of ways to cover it up. And it becomes a larger problem because now you have the pol various police departments involved. Charges are dropped or never brought. Trials are never held. Records disappear. People disappear. They are encouraged to leave town, or the priest is reassigned. All these tactics and more are used to cover up this nasty history within the Catholic Church. I was raised as a Catholic. And even back in those days, those ancient days when I was young, we had so many instances of priests going way off the charts. But you would be, as a member of the town, you would be ostracized, you would be chastised, you would be cast aside if you were to be critical of a priest, or if you were to tell what you know. There are so many children I remember growing up with, when they called the priest father, they meant it because he was their father. That doesn't mean that he provided for them. That doesn't mean that he raised them with any dignity. That was didn't mean that he acknowledged paternity or any of that. Priests would loot, even in the poorest community. My father used to joke and say, if there is a thing called reincarnation, he's submitting his application to come back as a priest. Because in the poorest community, the priest is king. You have somebody to do your laundry, you have somebody to do your cooking, you have somebody who drives you around. You live in the best house. You're invited to all the dignitary things. You know, it's pure colonial style. And multiply this now all over the world, where you see these kinds of acts being committed and being washed clean. There's no evidence that anything is going wrong. They made people who might have complained, or people who did complain, feel like less than human, that they were wrong. They were the ones who initiated things. They were the errant ones. They were the ones lacking spiritual depth and stability. And here we have the Pope standing today on the balcony of the Vatican, in Vatican City, pardon the pun, pontificating about how society as a whole, in other words, he's building in a defense. He's opening the hatch for a few people to have some kind of escape from the full wrath that they deserve against them. Society as a whole is declining. Priests are part of society. They are declining too in their moral values. And therefore, they fall prey to these temptations. Does not mention the word crime anywhere. Does not deal with the concept that the church intends to vigorously prosecute these crimes, which is what, of course, has been lacking all these decades. You have priests who have committed even murder, haven't been prosecuted. They find ways to hide them. They find ways to put them someplace where they can't be seen. And they play these games. And also the law enforcement community will go along with it, as if this were a totally administrative problem. They're solving an administrative problem by preventing the law to take control of a situation where people are harmed and attacked and people are scarred for life. So yes, Pope Francis, I think you started on the right track, but you derailed yourself, and I think you were purposeful in derailing the question, derailing the issue. The issue is not about human frailty. It is not about how society is eroding. All of us eroding, priest and not priest. We're all eroding The issue is you have thousands of felons walking around in their Cossacks and whatever else they're wearing these days. And in the name of the Lord, they are committing crime after crime on unsuspecting people and getting away with it, and getting away with it for decades. Again, I want to make clear, this is not an administrative matter. This is not a procedural matter. This is a felony. In almost all countries, this is a felony. So don't tell me and don't start thinking of telling me about how society as a whole is eroding and people therefore falling prey to temptations to do unnatural things. One, this is quite natural for those who did it. And two, having done it, and in many, many cases, having done it repeatedly, are allowed to escape the full weight of justice. Therefore, it is not an exaggeration to say that the Catholic Church, for decades and decades, has enabled and abetted injustice. All right, I'll take a little break and come back to talk about Sister Omarosa. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. And I sensed in the last week, particularly, the eagerness that many had wanting to discuss the subject, which I'm not discussing. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. I'm kind of funny that way. You see, as a professional journalist, I still, even though I'm not, nearly as involved as I used to be, I still know what a story is. And I know also what a story is not. And what we're being told is a story, in fact, is not. It's something else. What that is, I don't know. I know some of the elements of it, but it does not, in my view, rise to the level of a serious story. What is the issue here? Okay. We have someone who used to work in the White House as the communications director, the director of communications, I should say, for the Office of whatever it is, diversity or something like that. I have it in my notes here. But she got the job in the first place because she knew or had been associated with President Donald Trump in various capacities, but particularly through the reality show in which she was a participant and he was a producer. And after he became president of the United States, he invited her, at least this is what we're told. We don't know whether he invited her or she forced herself to be invited. Either way, she got a job. $179,000 a year or something like that. We weren't really clear about what her duties were. But you know, look, things, all things being equal, we're certainly, even now, not clear what qualifies Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump to be there. We don't, there are a whole bunch of people who have high-paying jobs whose credentials cannot be explained, whose experience and expertise are not even anywhere close to being on the radar screen. But hey, this is how it works. Total open nepotism. We have cronyism and all of that at galloping speed in the Trump administration. So she got a job there. From reports, she was very difficult. And they say this a lot about black people when they have a job and they take themselves seriously. But I also say it's not beyond the stretch of anybody's imagination that she would be a difficult person if you looked at how she functioned in different arenas. It's a constant theme of people having difficulty getting along with her and vice versa and so forth. Anyway, she gets fired. And she gets fired by the chief of staff, John Kelly, who was a retired general, and who actually is the second in command after the president at the White House. She is then known to have made a bunch of tapes, both audio and video, and whatever else is going on there. She has written a book, and in her book, she tells all kinds of tales about what she observed personally in the White House. The book is titled Unhinged: An Insider's Account of the Trump White House. Yes, she was director of communication for the Office of Public Liaison. Nobody knows what that does. Okay, so the book is published, and you know, as these kinds of things go, publicists and people representing the main person are making the rounds or setting up appointments. It's also sell the book, but it's also to give her a high profile and to market her, which is quite understandable. This is what happens with these kinds of books. She was the, apart from the, I'm forgetting names. What's going on here? Of the HUD. Doctor, see, these people are so out of my mind. You even forget that they exist and they're part of this Trump administration. She was one of the high-ranking members within the Trump administration, but that was something that worked to her advantage, at least so. Now, I wish her the best with her book. I think, you know, it is what it is. It's a reality TV type book. But the first thing I questioned was a title. An insider's account of the Trump White House. Now, that's where I start taking issue. I take the position that she was not an insider. She thought she was. She thought she ought to have been. But no, you're not an insider. You're close. You're close to the president and his sons and his daughter, and you know, you have interactions. That doesn't make you an insider at all. So from that perspective, the book will not afford me, from my journalistic point of view, a truly structural understanding of what was going on. Whether he called people the N-word, whether he drank 400 Cokes a day, whether he tanned every morning, these things are not important to me. And these things don't constitute policy decisions. And if you were an insider, we should be learning from Omarosa, Manigault, Newman. We should be learning about the backside of trade agreements, of that meeting at Trump Tower. We should be, I mean, when you're an insider, this is what we will get to know. You will name names, and you will connect names to policies that were deleterious, not only to the country as a whole, but particularly to that group that you referred to as my people. You have nothing to tell us about your people. Because in the end, this was a singular quest. You know, you had an opportunity. You saw the possibility of climbing really high, being truly exceptional, and high profile. You know, you'd be the female Donald Trump. Well, that didn't happen. So we get all these stories that are now hyped up. They're pumped up with a lot of adrenaline. You know, they have all this energy, but when you dissect them, they tell you nothing except how a person with a very myopic view and a very narrow interest, which is, of course, herself, cannot explain, even as a so-called insider, how this administration came to certain decisions. Now, that's when you're an insider. You have the power to be at the table when these things are decided. You have the power to put these things on the agenda. You have no such power in the Trump administration. So it's not that I am being nasty. It's just that I don't see that I could learn very much from you about the workings of the Trump administration. You see, that's my thing. So, as far as I'm concerned, we are not going to get high-level stories out of Omarosa's account about Trump. We're not going to get that. And the things that fall off the table, the little pieces that fall off the table, you now have to make it appear so important, so inside. When you look at it and you try to find what's there, there's nothing there. And I'm speaking strictly as a journalist. As you know, I don't like to rush into stories. It happens. My telling the story the minute it happens is not going to change the outcome of a story. It's already happened. But what I will do is that I would devote some time to analyzing things. I will deconstruct things so that when I report on the story, I'm in a whole different space from the rest of the media world. I'm talking and hopefully instructing people about how things work. Who is responsible for what? Like today, all the media, all of them, certainly the ones that I read, they are reporting about the Pope's brave letter to 1.2 billion Catholics. But that's not the story, is it? The story is, even as he speaks to 1.2 billion Catholics, he doesn't veer one inch off of the standard explanation and attitude as it concerns sexual abuse within the Catholic Church. And here he has the power and the authority to address both. From his perspective, as the head, the leader of 1.2 billion Catholics. Now, that's a big story to me. So I'll entertain your thoughts and your questions about Omarosa and her book, Unhinged, an insider's account of the Trump White House. I haven't gotten an account. The structural account of policy decisions, who made them, why, when, where, consequences, how you intervened, what you pushed as a policy, did you succeed, did you fail, what strategies did you use, who did you talk to persuade them to support whatever it is you were putting on the table. This is substantive stuff. All the other stuff, all the other stuff I could live without. I'm not even interested in that kind of stuff. I am not. So 888-874-4888, your thoughts about these two topics today. We were talking about the Pope as a head of the Catholic Church, making what is being considered to be a very dramatic and poignant plea to 1.2 billion Catholics to help the Church restore itself and its members to a position of personal improvement so that they do not fall prey to these temptations of sexual assault and so forth. And the second one is, was in your view, maybe you will take some more time to review that, is Omarosa Manigault Newman really an insider at the White House, able to tell us specifically what was going on inside the White House? Really? All right. That's where we are with that question. That's where we are. You see, you have to ask these questions because when we don't ask these questions, and by the way, that's another reason I'm offended in a way, personally. I take umbrage at the ease at which people assume they have accessibility to the black community. I really don't like that. How did you earn this accessibility? And why are you so sure that this community is the community that you can be fast and loose with the facts. Bruce, you're on the air from New York.
Hello, you, Therese. How are you today?
Okay, how are you?
Oh, fine, thanks. On the Omarosa issue, I mean, I'm neither here nor there. I see it as more of the noise that happens. So I don't have any particular strong feelings on that one. But on the Catholic Church, on the other hand, I will have to beg to disagree with you because I don't even think that the abuse is the issue or the Pope's letter is the issue. I think the issue is the church itself. I mean, I don't see any difference between the church and the abuse that's been happening in the Catholic Church from the beginning. Not decades, but centuries. Yeah. In
Yes,
fact,
I agree.
within the Catholic Church is something called agape love among priests. And that is about an adult male with a boy, with a young boy. I mean, and that's the highest form of love. In there, I mean, they have children, they have a couple of, but there are four types of love, and agape is the highest love, highest form of love as far as they're concerned. And it represents this relationship between an adult male and a young boy, So what we have to talk about, the real story has to be, is the church's right to exist, I mean, the church that's been doing this for two millennia, I mean, have a right to exist. And lastly, if you're going to be critical of the Pope, I mean, he seems to mean well. But the last pope that tried to change things in the Catholic Church was murdered in the Vatican itself in the 1975. I can't remember his name, 1975, 1976. But he was murdered in the church itself, So this corruption is so pervasive, so historic, so long-lasting that by merely trying to deal with a symptom, which is the abuse of children, the abuse of women in the church, it's not going to help. We have to look fundamentally at the root causation. And the only way to cure this is to uproot the Catholic Church itself from the body politic.
Well, let us be practical here. That's not going to happen, to uproot the church itself. I would settle, though, for a change in attitude where people understand that this is not an administrative problem. This is a crime. And it ought to be pursued and prosecuted as such. And no amount of placating and spiritual high talk is going to get around the issue that these are crimes with very real victims, and somebody's got to go to jail.
But you, Therese, I come from Barbados, a country where there's one particular church, Catholic Church, right, where a boy was murdered in the church. It happened twice, and these are two young boys fighting over the affections of a priest, and there was never an investigation into this. The Vatican intercedes in these matters to stop even diplomatically, to stop even investigations of murder within the precinct of church, and this happened twice in my little country. I don't believe that merely, and you have Catholics, I mean, protecting the church and the police, in the jail system, in the legal system, although, I mean, they have there's like a protectionist racket that's so deep that merely bring in one or two to book is not going to solve anything. They're just going to get more creative to hide their
But
malfeasance.
this is the conversation that needs to happen in the open, and this is a conversation that is long overdue. That's what I'm saying. Thanks
Well,
so much for calling.
okay.
Patricia, you're on the air from New York.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. I hope I find you
Hello.
in good health and spirits, and good
Yes,
afternoon
thank
to
you.
Pierre and family. Great. I remember back in the 80s, I don't know if you remember Father Bruce Ritter from Covenant House here in New York.
Sure.
And yeah, for those listeners who are not familiar with Covenant House, Covenant House was founded by, this was a Franciscan priest. And it just goes to show, because I was raised in the Episcopal Church, and the exact same thing was happening. So it's not just the Catholic Church. It's the church across the board. But in any event, Bruce Ritter founded Covenant House, which was a sanctuary for teens who had either run away or had been ostracized and removed from the home by their families. And, of course, they ended up in New York on the street, you know, and were at risk of prostitution and HIV at that time and all kinds of things. And over time, young boys came forth and accused him of sexual molestation. And the Franciscan Church investigated this. And before, you know, they could render an opinion, he resigned. But he was allowed to live out his life in solitude. You know, at the time, Robert Morgenthau was the DA. And, you know, he, just like he wouldn't prosecute DSK, he would not file any charges against Morgenthau. And the Franciscan Church at that time investigated whether or not he was improperly utilizing funds, because what he would do was trade favors and money for sex with these poor young boys. And even the Franciscan Church didn't do anything to him, nor did Bob Abrams, who at the time was the Attorney General in New York. So you have no criminal charges being brought against Bruce Ritter by the Manhattan District Attorney. You don't have any charges brought against him over his mishandling of charitable contributions to Covenant House by the State Attorney General. You know, I mean, I would have to agree with the previous caller that this entire system is so toxic and reeked. It's like nothing can be done. And you're right. This is a conversation that needs to be occurring throughout the entire religious community, not just the Catholic Church, because all of the religious orders are guilty of this.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for your call. From South Carolina, Khalil, you're on the air.
How are you, Therese?
From South Carolina.
Wow. I have to agree with the last three callers about the Catholic Church, but that's really not why I'm calling, but I just want to add one thing to the Catholic Church, is that we're forgetting about the nuns. So really it's the whole system. Because remember how the pregnant girls will go to the nuns' laundry and be abused. And, you know, so it seems like they have a whole system for abuse and then cover up, pay off. You know, with all that stolen gold they have all the money in the world. Good grief. It's painful. Okay, but I have some questions about this Omarosa thing. Because it seems to me, even all liars, even Trump tells the truth sometimes. And, you know, to me, it seems like Omarosa is mainly affirming what we already see. But the couple of statements that I thought were illuminating was she said, no, General Kelly's in charge, which I totally believe. And when she sees his mental illness kicking in, she sees that also. But she also said that he knew about these emails ahead of time. And, you know, it just seems like every day now that goes by, how can this investigation end? Because it seems like if you apply a legal mind to what's going on, it seems like there's more evidence being presented to this investigation. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, this whole Trump cabal, the whole Trump administration has been tainted, I think, with people who come out of a mindset of crime. I've never seen anything like this. Just about everybody has something to do with major crime, including the president. And there's no way that this administration could fly right, because people are compromised in so many ways. This is what is so disappointing, I think, about Trump.
Mm-hmm.
There are no values here. There's no moral grounding, so to speak. People, of things that you know people just won't do. You can't make that kind of statement at all. You can't vouch for any of these people. You can't vouch for them at all. They're compromised up to the tops of their heads. And they are venal. They're small. They're nasty. They are happy. They are the swamp. Remember I said the oldest swamp in America is the swamp of real estate.
Mm-hmm.
That's where many of them come out of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look closely at the story of real estate in the United States and you'll find murder, treachery, fathers killing their children, mothers killing the fathers. You have all kinds of nasty stories. It is not a clean, it's not a clean profession. But we haven't yet gotten to where Trump really functions, where he and his ilk, where they are most comfortable, and what they have been doing as professionals in their lives. We just learned yesterday that his former personal lawyer, Mike Cohen, is now being looked at for committing $20 million worth of fraud. So, you know, you're going to get this a lot. This is why you sit back and you just observe. Don't hurry to come to conclusions. Just sit back and they will hang themselves. They really will, because they're so dirty. They will do anything in pursuit of money and power. Thanks for calling.
Okay,
oh, you have something?
You
have something more?
Yeah, just one thing. It's just painful for me as a former New Yorker and someone from the Northeast to people know what this guy has been about all his life, like being a slumlord. I mean, the history is there. But it's this great white hope fallacy for some people. See, he's a lot of things to a lot of people, but the problem is Congress did not do their job. They didn't do their job. The Electoral College didn't do their job. This is dangerous now. This is not funny. This is not humorous. This man is falling apart every single day. The summertime used to be a slow news cycle, you know. Now they have had to, even
well, every day is a news cycle with Donald Trump. He's got to be the center of attention, even if it comes by, you know, stressful means. He's got to make himself the center of attention. Thanks for calling, Henry from Chicago. You'll be the last caller today.
All right, how's it going, you trees?
Okay, how's by you?
Oh, it's raining, so we're hanging in there. in regards to the Catholic Church, me growing up in the Catholic Church, one of the disappointing things about this statement by Pope Francis is in regards to, I don't see, I think you touched on this earlier, no priests being prosecuted, no bishops being excommunicated, because to me that's the only way we can at least have some resolve in this, because the thing is that the only way you're going to do this is if you start, because I look at this as a parallel to, you know, police shooting unarmed black men. You're not going to do, nothing's going to happen until you start prosecuting the perpetrators in these crimes. So it was disappointing to see that, you know, no priests, no bishops, no cardinals were indicted and excommunicated from the church. So it was just, to me, kind of appalling not to see that.
Yeah, it's disappointing. But, you know, think again. This Pope is no fool. He's a very politically astute man. And he knows better than most anybody what would happen to him if he should take what is considered a very radical position like that. What do you think would happen to this Pope?
Well, obviously, they would try to, you know, drive him out of his position. But, you know, in a sense, they're trying to do that already. So I figure you might as well just go for the gusto right now. because he will be killed.
He would not be the first pope killed.
And that's true, but a lot of conservative bishops want him dead already. So you might as well just go for the gusto right now.
Well, I think he's being very measured, but I think he needed to make it clear, just the same, that this is not about moral failure. This is also about the church. Although he kind of hinted at it, but this is not a time to hint at something that is so blatantly clear. The church has been hiding these people, covering up for them, conspiring with law enforcement in many parts of the world to give them free rein, you know, to wash all these dirty records away. And he needed to say something about that. Well, I'm hearing some music in the background. That means it's time to say goodbye. Thanks for joining me today and participating. And we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.